That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 92 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 17th of June, 2022. Faultist ja. We're still getting a huge reaction at Team GBS HQ to our interview on episode 90 with Professor Martin Curley, the man hell-bent on bringing Ireland's 19th century health system into the 21st century using the knowledge of many, many great Irish digital health companies. If you haven't heard it yet, it's a must listen. That's episode 90. And if you want to do business to or from Australia, that trade delegation we featured on episode 91 is about to land in Ireland. Listen back now, because it is an opportunity your business cannot afford to miss. This week, three very different businesses, each bringing knowledge and insights to the table. Many parents are familiar with their kids post-leaving cert going to Spain and heading to Thailand the following year. But we found one young woman who chose her booming business over travelling with the pack. We have another woman who wants to save you €2,000 on your wedding using the foreign exchange markets. Where else would you hear it but on That Great Business Show? And who doesn't want more sales and more profits? Well, we have a man who says he delivers just that. All these great insights are brought to you thanks to De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil, not beard oil. Made in Mayo, sold worldwide.
De Facto Shaving Oil, smooth as.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show. That Great Business Show.
Bear with me now as I introduce our first incredible guest. I have a daughter, Afric, who has been in Australia for a number of years. On Tuesday, my phone rings and the ident says, Afric's pal, Laura. As a dad, and fearing the worst, I answered immediately, only to be told that Afric's pal, also known as Laura McCarthy, founder of Drink Botanicals Ireland, was ringing because she had been told to do so by one of Team GBS's best supporters. That's Paula Fitzsimons. Paula runs the Enterprise Ireland-backed Going for Growth program for women entrepreneurs. Phew, so no disaster or drama. Well, then Laura started telling me about what she's been up to since I last saw her, and that was possibly 4 years ago, or maybe even more. Wow, wait till you hear this story. This is one to share with anyone doing the Leaving Cert or trying to find a workaround of the third level CAO system. There's simply no substitute for hard grind and a good pivot. Laura McCarthy, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much for having me, Conal.
What about that for an intro? Is that accurate? You grind and you have ground for a few years.
That's it, absolutely. I suppose Drink Botanicals was founded in 2017 when I was in college. I always wanted to run my own business from a very young age. From the age of 8, I was doing yard sales and I was selling on eBay and all sorts. So I always had that kind of entrepreneurial mindset, if you want to put it that way. So when I was in college, I thought it would be a great idea to start a business. However, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I was in marketing at the time. And I remember in summer of 2017, all my friends were going traveling. And I had this business idea, which I then put to task in September 2017. It really kicked off. So
hang on a second now. The bit that I wanted to hear was all of your pals, including my daughter, went overseas on their holidays. Laura stayed at home because you wanted to set up your business.
I did, yes. Yeah. So I spotted a gap in the Irish market that when gin and tonics were taking off, especially going to bars, restaurants, when you ordered a gin and tonic, you were getting served a goblet glass with a lot of botanicals in it, such as juniper berries, hibiscus flower, orange, you name it.
And all I know, fancily called botanicals, yes?
That's it, yeah.
They're called flavours, really.
Yeah, they are. So I noticed that there was no product at home for a consumer to recreate this experience. So I got together with my cousin, Aisling, who is a graphic designer, and I asked her would she like to work on a project such as creating a kit that contained all these botanicals. And she was more than happy to do so. But in the meantime, I was doing a lot of market research and I approached my local off-license, Redmonds of Ranelagh, and got speaking to the owner, Jimmy. And I asked him, what would he think of such a product? Would it sell? He's been in business for so many years, he'd have a fair idea.
Now, I have to put it again. At this stage, you're very young.
Yes.
Almost at legal, just beyond legal drinking age.
That's it, yeah.
I'm not allowed to ask you your age, but I'm kind of giving it away there.
Yeah. So this was when I was 20, when I just turned 20. And I, as I said, I approached the local off license and Jimmy straight away jumped on it. He thought it was a great idea. He said a lot of customers were actually asking for juniper berries and whatnot, but they didn't have an item like that. So he said, give me a dozen kits to trial. We'll see how they go. And a week later, I got a phone call from Jimmy to say, Laura, we're sold out.
How big a buzz was that?
It was amazing because it was when I got that phone call, it really kind of said to me that there is potential to take this business idea further. And since getting listed in Redmonds was our first stockist, we then went on to stock over 200 outlets across Ireland, which was huge.
But your cousin was hardly making little boxes or doing hand-done graphic design and stuff like that, I presume.
So she designed the whole brand.
But you had to gear up. You had to start getting kind of professional about it.
And that all started on my kitchen table.
Fabulous. Fabulous story. But that's only the very beginning because a couple of things happened after that. For example, somebody copied you.
Yeah, so I actually walked into Lidl a few years ago and I noticed that they were also doing a similar kit. So it came in little sachets with juniper berries and pink peppercorn and whatnot. So maybe they thought it themselves. I don't know. I'm not saying they fully copied at all. But I noticed they obviously spotted an opportunity in the market as well.
So then comes the big pivot.
So we're going to fast forward now a bit to during lockdown. After the gin fusion kit, we also launched other successful products such as the Expert Gin Fusion Kit, the Cocktail Fusion Kit, and a number of other items.
And not everybody will be familiar with them, so you better explain what those were, roughly.
They're kits, so for example, if you wanted to make cocktails at home, we created this kit which contains a cocktail shaker, a lot of botanicals, and all the mixology equipment you need to make a premium cocktail at home. So that went extremely well in the market. We sold out a couple of times of the cocktail kit. We stocked a lot of well-known retailers around the country and it went really well for us. And we still today are selling them worldwide on a lot of platforms.
Are you filling the little sachets yourself or are you getting them manufactured somewhere?
So we have a number of manufacturers that help us put our products together, which is great. And then we have a warehouse in Dublin as well where everything is stored and sent out from there. So after the success of the Gin Fusion Kit and the Expert Cocktail Fusion Kit and whatnot during lockdown, it kind of gave me an opportunity to step back from the business and think of new product development opportunities.
Is this during COVID?
This is during COVID, yeah. Yes. So we're actually very fortunate to be extremely busy during lockdown because, as you know, the home drinking took off and lots of people became discerning during lockdown and they wanted to experiment with new cocktail recipes and more premium items. So thankfully, it was really, really busy for us. And then again, supermarkets were open as well as off licenses. So we didn't really have a knock-on effect as such of places.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah, so it went really well for us. And as I said, it kind of also gave me a chance to step back a bit and think of new opportunities. And after a lot of research and experimentation, I kind of noticed that there was no premium cocktail syrup or garnishes on the market for both the on-trade and off-trade.
What kind of research did you do? Did you have to go through cocktail bar after cocktail bar, work hard, look at another cocktail bar?
To be honest, it was actually a lot online. So
I'm joking because, of course, they're all closed down at that stage, if
that's
you remember.
That's it, yeah. So on a lot of research online, and I noticed that, as I said, there was no premium cocktail syrup available on the market. And a lot of bartenders were making their own syrup from scratch, which is time-consuming. And the reason they were doing that is because they mightn't trust the quality of other brands out there.
Now, explain that to me, because you explained that to me on the phone, and I was not aware that this even happens. What do they do?
Yeah, so a lot of bars would actually make their own syrup from scratch, maybe because they like to make their own syrup, but also they mightn't trust the quality and ingredients of other brands. So I kind of spotted a gap for us to create a syrup that contained natural ingredients and enter the market with something different. And also I noticed that a lot of bars were dehydrating their own fruit from scratch, which is extremely time consuming. It can take up to 17 hours to dehydrate your own fruit.
So what do? They get a piece of lemon and they dehydrate it?
Yeah, so if you go to a cocktail bar where you get a cocktail, you'll see a slice of dehydrated fruit probably on your cocktail. And a lot of places are still dehydrating their own fruit from scratch. And it's a pain, an absolute pain, because first of all, it's labor intensive. You have to leave the dehydrator on. It's not, how would you say...
And I presume you know this because you're doing this now.
Yeah, so we supply now a lot of bars and restaurants around the country with our range of dehydrated fruits and premium cocktail syrups.
And this was a big opening for you.
It was indeed, because our business was very much focused on the off-trade. So the off-trade would be retailers, off-licenses. And now we've really focused on the on-trade, which is restaurants, bars and hotels. I really noticed that there was a huge opportunity here because, first of all, we're the only Irish brand on the market doing dehydrated fruit for cocktails. In a way, we have first mover advantage, and a lot of customers are finding us online or they're finding us through word of mouth.
And is there competition from abroad?
There would be competition from abroad. However, we kind of enter the market at a good price point. A lot of competitors would actually charge more for their fruits or their syrups. And I suppose what sets us apart from them is we're an Irish business and we work closely with our customers. And
so where are you doing your dehydration and where are you putting bottling and how are you distributing and?
Yeah, so we actually have a number of manufacturers that we work with to make our products to our requirements. And a big milestone for the company is that we signed with one of Ireland's largest drinks distributors, which was huge. So we got a lot of listings. We're dealing with a lot of five-star hotels around the country. And I suppose a lot of the reason why they are using us is because we offer them a solution. And that solution is removing the burden of them having to prepare and make their own syrups and garnishes from scratch.
You are solving a problem that I didn't know existed. So that's always a good start, isn't it?
Yeah.
And one of the joyful things about that is that, as you explained to me, if I were to buy a bottle of your syrup at home, I stick it into the back cupboard and probably stays there until it goes off. Whereas in bars, there's big turnover. Big turnover means money is good.
Yes, that's it. And really, I notice the on-trade is where the serious volume is, because a customer could buy a bottle of syrup in Avoca or Donnybrook Fair or one of our stockists, and it could be sitting in their drinks cabinet for a month or so. Whereas when you're dealing with bars and restaurants, that could be gone in a couple of hours. That was a really kind of eye-opener to the business as well, that there is going to be a lot more volume here if we target the on-trade.
And then I said that you have just done the Going for Growth program with Paula Fitzsimons. Part of that is, I think, you're not allowed onto it unless you're thinking of going abroad, going big or going home. What's the plan?
Yeah, so a big, how would you say, dream for the business is export opportunities. And I think this year and next year will be a huge time for Drink Botanicals, because I think there is huge export opportunities because we've proven ourselves strong here on the Irish market. And I think if we had the right partner and distributor in place, it could really scale the business.
Are there, but if say you go first up UK, well, besides all of the Brexit issues and all the rest, what about the competitors there? It's not such an open goal, is it?
Well, we've actually launched a number of our products on Amazon UK. This is a great way to test the market. I did a lot of research and I noticed that there was no real garnishes aimed at cocktails on Amazon. So I thought this, again, spotted a gap that we could do very...
You spend a lot of time spotting gaps.
We could take this opportunity to kind of test the UK market. And we actually have sold out on a number of products twice now on Amazon. So I think
now,
we're proving ourselves.
Give me again, we rarely ask about people's businesses per se, but is that a lot? When you say you sold out, are we talking about a very big number or a small number?
To us, it's more than we expected, put it that way, because...
Very coy.
Yeah, no, it was, we ship to the FBA fulfillment center of Amazon, and then they distribute our products for us. So we'd send a number of items over to them, and then they'd send to their customers. So it's a one drop, if you want to put it that way.
Well, that's useful.
Okay. Very useful. And we've found a huge market there in the UK through Amazon, and a lot of them would actually be repeat customers, which proves that...
They like it.
They like it.
The only thing with Amazon is, if I understand it, they take a big, fat chunk of your money.
To be honest, I personally don't think it is that much, because they are the distributor in a way. And it also depends, their price per item that they charge depends on the size and the weight. So that was very interesting to learn, because I thought it was a set fee, but it's not. It all depends on the weight and the size of the item.
And one of the problems that you have is that you have a heavy item being liquid, and that it you can't presumably charge. How much does a bottle, round figures, how much does a bottle of your botanicals cost, or your syrups?
So our syrups, we'd have two prices, on-trade price and off-trade price. The recommended retail price for the syrups would be $12.95.
Okay, so in fact, I'll say it's a small ticket, but heavy. And yeah. Yet you can still make money out of that by distributing it on Amazon, yeah?
Yeah, so that's proved very strong for us. And as I said, it's a great way to test the market. And we also actually launched on Faire, which is a US marketplace.
Faire, F-A-I-R-E. Okay.
And again, that's been very successful for us. We only launched this year on it, and we deal with a lot of retailers. We're scaling it as we go, but we are working with a number of retailers over in the US supplying them. So they'd buy directly from us through Faire, and we'd ship to them.
How does that operate? Do you load a pallet and ship it over to the States, and they distribute it from there?
So it depends on the quantity they order. Say they ordered a number of syrup bottles, then we'd send on a pallet. But if they just ordered the garnishes or whatnot, we can send through our forwarder, say UPS.
And is there nobody in the States making those garnishes, or are you going through the Irish diaspora, or what are you targeting over in the States?
I think that we have a number of SKUs. So we have over 20 garnishes for the retailers to choose from. So we have a variety that they might be able to get elsewhere. So I think that definitely...
So it's Shamrock or something? Or...
And that's the other side of it. I think they like buying from an Irish business. Funny you say that, actually. One company we deal with, Northwest Spirits in the US, I was messaging, he sent me an email there yesterday, and he said, oh, we actually have a customer from Drogheda that comes in. I must let him know we're stocking your syrups and garnishes. So that was good to hear. So obviously the Irishness plays a big part in that as well.
And as I mentioned, Paula Fitzsimons only wants you if you have huge ambitions. And I also know, because she told me, that you gave the keynote address for your cohort, yes, was it yesterday or the day before? And that means that you must be best girl in class. She must be expecting huge things of you. What are your own ambitions?
Yeah, it was very nice of Paula to ask me to present to everyone. Obviously,
you told me that you were shocked that you didn't expect it at all.
I didn't, but I was more than happy to say yes and to stand up in front of everyone and explain my story. I suppose going for growth has been amazing. It's kind of enabled me to step back from the business and kind of look into it and working on the business rather than in the business. And Jeanann O'Brien, she was our main lead, and she's been incredible. She supported us for the past 6 months. Jesus, it's a long time we were doing that. The program was a 6-month program, and she took her time to meet us once a month as a group. And I've met incredible entrepreneurs on that program. And I've learned so much from everyone, and I couldn't recommend it enough.
And the bit that's making me smile all of the time is, I'm looking at you now, and hopefully you're a huge success, but I knew you as a school kid in Muckross, where you went to school with my daughter, as I mentioned. And it's like you've just ground it out. You didn't go out to play. You didn't go overseas. You just worked away all of the time.
Yeah, I suppose after when I left Muckross, I went into TU, now called TU Dublin, to do a marketing degree. And I was running my business at the same time. So I was trying to juggle both study and business. And then in our third year, we had the option to do an Erasmus or an internship.
And for those who don't know what an Erasmus is, it is a fabulous program where you go overseas. You chose, again, not to go. Maybe you're a home bird. Maybe you don't want to go overseas.
A bit of that as well, but especially when I had the business going on, I took the opportunity to do an internship. So I went knocking on KPMG's door to see if they had an internship available in their marketing department.
And I do not know the answer to this. Did you know anybody in KPMG? Why did you choose KPMG?
I knew a few people in there and I heard great things about it. And I thought their marketing department would be a great opportunity for me to learn from. So I went and had a meeting with their HR manager to see if they had anything available for me for this internship. And I explained to them that I had a business running as well. So I was trying to juggle both. So when I walked out of that meeting, I was like, okay, maybe they won't take me on board, seeing I mightn't think that I mightn't give it my full time or whatnot. So I actually got a call then a week later to say I was offered an internship in their knowledge management department.
What's different to marketing? I mean, that's nothing to do with marketing, is it?
No, but they're in the same department. So it was quite nice because I was working on the knowledge management department.
What does knowledge management mean?
It would be very much research-based. So looking at tenders, company research reports, which was very, very interesting. But as well as that, I was in the marketing department. So I was doing a lot of events and working closely with them. So as I said, I was working in KPMG for 10 months and also running the business. So that was...
And in college.
That's it. Yeah. So it was Well, I suppose I wasn't in college for that time.
Yeah.
I was,
but it all counts though.
Yeah, that's true. So I was juggling both. And to be honest, looking back now, I'm so glad I did it. First of all, because I learned an insane amount that I could then apply to my business. And it was just a great opportunity I couldn't turn down, I suppose.
Back to the future. You dream. You keep telling me you step back and you look at the business. And I keep laughing and thinking, does she do anything else? You run a very successful business. How big can you grow? And how are you going to fund it? Because you will need funding at some stage, I presume.
For now, we're really focusing on the Irish market. But this year, as I said, I think there's huge opportunities in the UK and elsewhere. And the US as well. We've kind of proved ourselves there through Fair and also Amazon UK. So it just kind of shows to me that there's huge opportunity. And I think if we had the right partner and distributor in place to enable us to kind of scale in these markets, it would be a huge advantage to us. And again, our product's quite unique in the sense that there's not much competition out there, especially with the garnishes. So a lot of places are coming to us, which is great, instead of us going to them.
And I know that this is going to feed into the last question, because you know the last question is, who would you hire in a heartbeat? And you made the terrible mistake of telling me who. You're not meant to tell me. I'm meant to have a huge surprise. But it's a very good choice. Who would Laura McCarthy, founder of Drink Botanicals Ireland, hire in a heartbeat?
Well, personally, I thought about this question for a while and it didn't take me long to figure out who I would hire in a heartbeat. And I definitely think that would be Pat Rigney from Gunpowder Irish Gin, also the founder of the Shed Distillery.
In Drumshambo, County Leitrim.
Yeah.
And a guy that I've met at an event, I was MC at an event that he was at, and he's our most impressive guy. In fact, I think I tried to get him on to the very early ones of the podcast. We'll have another go. Mm. If he comes on, we'll recommend you to him.
Yeah,
Laura, fantastic story. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Make one small switch. Switching from shaving foam to all-natural De Facto shaving oil will give you the smoothest, softest shave ever. Switching from shaving oil to De Facto helps stop 20 million non-recyclable shaving foam cans go to landfills every year. Switching from shaving oil to De Facto will save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. DeFactoShave.com.
Every day accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy to use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Rate and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That great business show.
If, and it's a big if, you've been in a queue in your local bank recently, you will no doubt have seen that quaint display showing the buy and sell rates for foreign exchange. The difference between the buy and sell rate is technically known as the spread, but to bank management it's probably better known as the pot of gold. For switching from, say, dollars to euro, that spread can be simply outrageous, up to 3% in some places, for simply pushing a button. We're always looking for ways to save Team GBS their hard-earned, and for that reason, we have invited the relatively recently appointed CEO for Ireland of OFX, that's an Australian forex company, to join us on That Great Business Show. She is Maeve McMahon. Maeve, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Colin. Very happy to be here.
3%. The only thing they're short of doing is putting on little masks and going out and robbing us some other which way.
Well, look, banks have a very different proposition to what we do.
You are buying and selling foreign exchange. They are buying and selling foreign exchange. How much would you charge to switch, take a number, any number, 10,000 euro into dollars, say?
Well, typically we would just look at what you're trying to do and what is it a one-off transaction and what you're trying to do. Is it an individual trying to buy something overseas or are you a business who would have regular payments overseas? And so then we would discuss your needs as a particular client and then we would quote you. So I'm really genuinely not in the business of giving rates on the online, but I was very happy to...
Is it cheaper than 3%?
It would be cheaper than 3%.
Would it be considerably cheaper than 3%?
It would be considerably cheaper than 3%. I'm very happy to get one of my dealers on the phone to talk to you about what that could look like in your particular instance, but... Yeah, they're busy today dealing with Bank of England interest rate hikes. So there's lots of volatility in the market today.
But that is because one of the things that you do differently is you are 24/7 available to your clients and they actually you can pick up the phone to them.
Yeah, we have...
Old school.
We're a global company headquartered in Sydney, Australia. That's where it was founded about 25 years ago. We have offices now in 8 locations around the world. And we have what we call a follow the sun model. So effectively, when we're awake in Europe, we will answer the phone for those people in Australia who potentially want to trade, or certainly Europeans who want to trade. When we're asleep, Australia will answer the phone to our European clients who might wake up worrying about interest rate hikes, for example. So follow the sun, and our model is what we call human plus digital. So there's a person who will answer your phone call, and it's a digital platform.
That sounds very attractive. And it obviously attracted you to join because you've got a big career in the past in the banking world.
I have a long established career in financial services, yes. I joined OFX about 6 months ago now. And I was attracted to OFX for a number of reasons. Most notably, it's a fintech and it's a growth opportunity, especially with a base in Ireland. And so wanting to grow its European business from Ireland. So I was attracted not least by the internationalization of this business across Europe, of also the fact that it's very well run and well governed fintech. So we're quoted on the Australian Stock Exchange, which means that we take compliance and risk very seriously. A lot of the executives are people who I have come across in my past or have worked in companies where I've also potentially been in the past. And so that was for me very important because when you're in a regulated business, you want to make sure that the people running the joint are serious.
It does help.
And also, I guess, the values of OFX, they're something that I really genuinely relate to. We get stuff done. We're better together. We push boundaries. So these are all core values to me. We're better as a team.
And there's another core value that you love as well.
inspiring customer confidence?
No, the women.
The women, indeed.
They are gender balanced or gender parity, just like we do on this podcast.
Yeah, my boss, Sarah Webb, is obviously a woman. She heads up the EMEA region. There's actually another woman on the executive team, Elaine Herlihy. She's the CMO.
I saw that. She's ex-Irelander.
She's from Kerry. Yeah. We have 50% female representation at the executive level and 30% at board level. So for me, as a strong proponent and supporter of women in business, that was something that really appealed. And we live that every day. So quite a diverse workforce, and everyone is encouraged to, you know, raise a question and own something if you want to fix something or execute against it. So key values that I can relate to, and also great gender diversity.
So we will agree OFX is a good company. Two things. Brexit. Brexit is one of the reasons why they set up here. How? Why?
Yes. So if you understand what happened with Brexit...
Nobody does.
No one.
Or still.
The UK was where we housed our European license for passporting financial services into Europe. So when the UK left the European Union, and they no longer have the privilege of passporting services from London into Europe. So coincidentally, OFX was looking and evaluated a number of different areas and locations for where they would house their European HQ. Ireland was decided as that location. That decision was made obviously a long time before I got there. But I've completely benefited from Brexit, as has the team in OFX Ireland, because our jobs are a direct result of Brexit. So these are jobs that probably maybe wouldn't have existed before, or certainly are now jobs that are created in Ireland as a result of Brexit. So I'm, whilst whatever views of Brexit, I'm quite happy with the fact that, you know, I now have a job that's direct consequence.
I'd love to. The boss man has got a funny name. His middle name is Skanders or something.
Yeah, that John right? Skander Malcolm. He goes by Skander Malcolm. Yeah.
Skander. I wonder what Skander said when he saw what Brexit had delivered to him or to OFX. I presume he just went, what?
Well, I think like many business leaders globally, they were certainly perplexed by the decision that the British public made, but obviously respecting democracy, our business has had to make some decisions around that. And so for us, we've benefited. And actually, our board and global executive team were in Dublin last week, and it was really great for them to see and understand how, you know, we are focusing on Europe and the European expansion from here. And they actually think it's an opportunity because I guess the UK market is so big. Growing in Europe was maybe lost in the noise of UK being so big. Whereas we're a small market in Ireland, and we very much want to grow Ireland, but also grow Europe from Ireland. So that was good for them to hear directly.
And are you hiring?
We are hiring.
Like the rest of the world, I suppose.
We are hiring. In fact, we've just almost completed our hiring. I've actually hired, I joined and there were 5 people in the Irish team, and we're now at 14. So that's been great. We're hiring salespeople. We're hiring compliance, finance. So we've grown
still,
out
you're
the
still
team.
Hiring, though.
Well, these are people who've just literally come on board in the last couple of months. So we have a lot of new people in the OFX Ireland team. But we're always hiring, and we're now looking at having a kind of location agnostic approach to where we put our talent. So there are roles in the UK, if they can be done remotely from Dublin or from anywhere in Ireland, yeah, why not? So
interesting. Well, here's a why not. Harry Goddard, he's the boss of Deloitte. We had him on. And he was very specific that he was hiring 600 people. And he said they had to work in Ireland, because I was suggesting that, you know, if you're Polish and you can work from Poland into Ireland, why not?
Well, every European jurisdiction would have requirements around what you would need from a tax perspective and a branch perspective. Right now, we're hiring people through our Irish branch, and then looking at how we set up people, say in Germany, for example. We are setting up a German branch of the Irish entity. So there's lots of nuances around hiring. So we have an aggressive hiring plan for Europe as and when we figure out how to hire people.
But I thought, and I'm sure, and I've just forgotten, I've had at least maybe one, maybe two platforms that will make sure that that is made easy. In other words, I think that they join virtual company and everything is looked after in the cloud, whereas they will still be working for OFX.
Yeah, we're not of a sufficient kind of size and scale where we would have big offices, and we want to make sure that the employees are joining the OFX family. So we work with third parties who help us onboard employees locally by providing locally relevant benefits and making sure that employees have a package that is relevant to them in their local country. So that's something we're exploring in the different markets right now.
Just before you came in, we had a chat there with Laura, and we were talking about her business. And I was surprised that she could benefit using Amazon about using you as well. I couldn't get my head around this, because I would have thought if you're selling to Amazon, Amazon would like to obviously take the entire package from you, but you can intervene. Explain.
Well, we can help Laura's business by setting up what we call a global currency account, whereby regardless of whichever country or currency that Laura wants to deal with, whether it's pounds, sterling, dollars or Japanese
GBP,
yen.
GBP, as you said.
GBP. then she can actually receive currency into that account and actually also pay out her bills from that same account. And if she is selling on Amazon, then they will actually pay into that account. It needs to be a named account for Amazon to be comfortable to make those payments in. So we work very much online. The online seller business has obviously exploded for our business. It's one of our key segments. It's exploded in the last couple of years. So that's very much a value proposition that we're pushing out globally and trying to help the likes of Laura manage their costs, because small businesses that are growing rapidly, they just want to focus. And in Laura's case, it's on gin and really interesting products. So she's really busy just running her business. The last thing she wants to be worried about is how to manage her FX. And that's where OFX step in.
And you were very specific. You said that you could save her money.
Yes.
Well, that's always nice to hear as well. And I know how long is a piece of string, and you're going to say that to me again. But is there a substantial amount of money that you can save people?
Yes, there is, Conal. We have very competitive rates. It's a platform business. So effectively, we don't have the huge oversight of, say, the likes of big banks or the overheads of big banks. So if she's trading regularly, we can help facilitate that movement of funds globally, because that's what we do.
But you did tell me previously, I think, that you do one-offs as well, am I right?
We would do one-offs, yeah.
When the Bank of Dad, in other words, remember that conversation? I was saying, really? He said with great interest, when the Bank of Dad is making a transfer, that you can handle that as well?
Yes, we do. I mean, consumer business is obviously where we started in Australia. We actually helped, the business was started with some traders who understood that Australia was a key destination for students. So wanting to help them save money. So it very much started from a Bank of Dad concept. So I know your daughter's based in the US. So if...
That's one, and there's one in Australia.
So there we go.
There's transfers everywhere.
So we can sign you up
and
then
help
you.
In fact, if you look at a map, it's kind of... It seems to be a circular economy, but it's all going out of Ireland, I can tell you.
So we can make those transfers globally. We can get your daughter set up with their accounts, and you can make those transfers pretty straightforward.
And it's done instantly, unlike what I have to go through at the moment, which is a 5-day event.
Yes, obviously, much quicker. You know, we have relationships with 115 banks globally. So, you know, it's a swift process. And there's faster payments. It's a recognized platform in Europe, whereby we conform to that as well. And so it will be a lot quicker than 5 days.
OFX has ambitions. And how ambitious are they for the Ireland unit? I won't call it a branch, because you're bigger than a branch. Because you are covering Europe. You did say that, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, the Irish business is set up to cover Europe. So OFX Payments Ireland Limited is the European entity. We have big ambitions for that entity, and we have grown historically by just people finding us online. We're now starting to put our head above the parapet, promote ourselves a little bit more as we try and focus our growth in Ireland and in Europe. And in fact, last week when the board was over, I presented a plan to the board that would grow our business by 5x in 4 years. So it's nice, yeah. It's
so
ambitious.
You're still hiring, really? Or did they say yes?
They are very much behind the plan. I now just need to deliver. So putting a plan together is almost easy, dare I say, but now it's on the execution and the delivery. So I'm confident that we can deliver because we've a lot of research that has gone into that plan, not least McKinsey Global Payments data, which has helped us look at what we call a total addressable market for the cross-border payments industry.
Which is beyond vast. I was looking at it this morning. It is
huge.
Like, there aren't enough zeros in the world.
Something like 12 trillion in Europe alone for cross-border payments in the SME space. Per annum.
I mean, and then just take a little smidgen off that for your costs. And yeah. It's a vast amount of money.
It's when you look at it in those terms, and this is McKinsey data, so I'd like to think that it's well verified.
I should put trillion into context. I saw a gorgeous example of what the difference between a million and a billion is. Did you ever see this one? I think a million in seconds is something like 12 days. A billion is something like 32 years. When we move to trillion, good luck.
Yeah.
Like, it's vast. We say it too easily, maybe, trillion.
We do. We say it very easily. And the German economy in particular is huge. So, you know, that's why it's one of our focus areas. So that's, we estimate about 3.4 trillion of an addressable market. So I think Germany is a very large economy. And, you know, it's the third largest economy globally. A lot of import and export trade because of their manufacturing business. So it's a plan, to come back to your question, that I stand behind, and I'm excited to kind of lead the charge and help grow this business here.
But Frankfurt is a world global or a global financial center as well. Would that not be where you might set up a unit? Or?
We actually take a different approach. So yes, financial services are based in Frankfurt, but actually when you look at where the foreign exchange needs are, and we've done a lot of research on the density of manufacturing companies around Germany. So I would like to think that it could be Dusseldorf or Munich. So we want to be as close as possible to the end customer. So we don't need to be in a financial services center. We actually want to be close to those people who have foreign exchange needs, and they are typically going to be manufacturing companies. What we call the Mittelstand in Germany makes up 2.5 million companies, largely family owned, and that's where we have a natural sweet spot.
And they call it an SME over there because it's only 250 or something employees, even though here it's 2.5 employees or something. It's a different world altogether over there, and it's generation to generation to generation. A long time ago, 100 years ago, I worked in Dusseldorf or near to it. It's a very nice place to be. I'd recommend that place.
I haven't been yet, but I'm
gorgeous.
Keen to
absolutely
go.
Absolutely lovely. Yep. So that's those are the growth plans, but you also are mad keen, because it's part of your lot in life, to drive more women into the industry, into the business.
Yeah, I'm a big supporter of women in business, obviously, not least because I am one. But I've had a lot of good support from many female bosses in my past. And in the future, you know, today, a lot of my close mentors continue to be strong women. So I was a founding member of the Lean In Circle in Ireland, the Lean In chapter in Ireland. Many people will know that as something that Sheryl Sandberg created.
She'd be the same Sheryl Sandberg who's now left Meta.
Yes.
Wonder why?
Well, I won't comment. I think what, you know, the concept behind these Lean In circles is really helping women to help themselves. And so I got involved in Lean In when I was in Ulster Bank, and I was asked to sponsor the Women's Network in Ulster Bank because I was one of the executive at the time in Ulster Bank. And I wanted to open that up to not just the senior women, which it had been previously, but actually to all of the women across all of the branches in Ireland.
It is odd, isn't it, that you'd actually only keep it to the senior women? It's a gender apartheid or something like that, or is it?
It felt weird to me anyway.
It does sound
but
weird
it's,
as well. Yeah.
We opened it up. There was huge appetite to open it up and well received. And with that also, Breda McCaig, who was also in Ulster Bank at the time and very much a fan and supporter of female women in business and promoting diversity as well. She was also key founding member, as was Nuala Murphy, who was the lead for the Irish chapter, and she helped bring the Northern Irish chapter into Ireland. So we had a great team. There were a few others involved, and it was great. We actually did get to meet Sheryl at one point as well.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How was she like?
She was great, actually.
Now, was he just kind of, how you, I'm here because I have to do the 2 hours or something, or did you actually have a real chat?
No, we had a real chat. The leaders of the chapter had a real chat with her just around, you know, what we were finding. And she wanted to know, were there any real case studies where we'd actually helped women? And there were a couple of good ones. She was genuine in her enthusiasm for what we were doing in Ireland. That was a few years ago when I was in Ulster Bank. And I think I love to see other women do well. And yeah, I think that's something I've, you know, love to bring in more commercial women into the team. I've just hired my first woman into a commercial role in OFX Ireland. So that's great. I'm looking forward to seeing her career flourish. So it's something that I'm, well, it's just key to what I believe in, my core values, right? So
you're allowed to do that, you
I'm
know?
Allowed, I think, yeah.
50%, 52% of the population is female. Always have to remind men in particular of that. And if you don't hire them and don't promote them, you're missing out on, well, 52% of the opportunity or of the skill. Well, two questions, because you just mentioned it there. You have mentors. Do you believe in mentors? You do, obviously.
Yeah, I do. I do, definitely. I've had great mentorship and advice from people over the years. And in fact, I'm a firm believer of maintaining regular business networks, because you'll always get a nugget of piece of advice from someone who's done it before, or been there, seen that. So, you know, why try and recreate the wheel yourself? And also, it's for me personally opened many doors. So one of my former bosses in GE, who I still hold in very high esteem and is still a mentor to me today, he actually made the introduction for me into Ulster Bank. And so I'm really grateful for the mentors that I have in my life and for the support that they've given me.
We believe in mentors. Final question to Maeve McMahon. Who would she hire in a heartbeat?
This is a good one. I think I'd pick up on that mentor line, actually, and I would hire two people.
That's allowed. That
if
is
I'm allowed.
Yes, of course it is, yes.
On a personal basis, I would probably hire Bob Rotella to help improve my golf game. And on a professional basis, I would actually hire probably Marshall Goldsmith as an executive coach. He wrote the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And given the ambitions that we have in OFX Ireland, I think he might be somebody I could have on my team who would help me grow the business.
Well, maybe you could have three people playing golf together. How about that? The three
there
of you could go around, yeah.
Yeah.
Maeve McMahon, CEO, OFX, IRL and EU. Do you get all that?
I got all that.
Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make Defacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of Defacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DefactoShave.com.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
It may be Hollywood that gave us the image of the tough-talking, tough-acting business leader squeezing the last dollar out of every deal. However, those of us who actually know real business know that it's always good to be nice and helpful to others in business, because you never know when it comes back to benefit you. My next guest has been a huge supporter of Team GBS. He has continually promoted us on social media and has suggested businesses to us that we should feature. And that's why it's his time to shine. Andrew Walker is co-founder, with his wife Susanna, of Beacon Business Commercial Services, BBCS, based in Cork. But Andrew isn't here just because he's a nice guy. He's here because what he does is coach businesses to get more sales and more profits. And what we want him to do is to give Team GBS a free consultation, as we do. You see, we can be tough too. Andrew Walker, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Connell, thank you very much. And thank you for that message that popped up in my LinkedIn messaging saying, Andrew, time to shine. Opportunity Knocks, I thought, for those who remember that show.
And the reason that you got that from me is because you talk to me, as many others do, on LinkedIn. I really encourage it. I find it very useful. It's just because it's the messages are always sitting there looking at me saying, oh, but God, I better do something about that now. Yeah. Oh, that's a really good idea. Or. So it's a great way. So anybody who's listening, you're now listening to Andrew Walker, who did get on the show directly, indirectly, because of LinkedIn. Do use it, please, to contact us. Let's talk, first of all, about accents. That is not a Killiney accent.
Interesting question. I grew up in Killiney.
South Dublin, for those who don't know where Killiney is. That's very like, posh.
Just next door to Dorky, which everybody knows, I think, with this neck of the woods. I grew up there still 17. I went to college in Black Rock in St Andrews on Booterstown.
Where my granddaddy went.
Really? Mm-hmm. And there you go. Small world.
John Nelson Beaumont. How about that for a name?
That's a very fine name.
That is. I've come from good stock.
It sounds like it, absolutely.
From Andrews, you didn't learn that accent in Andrews.
No, but
my
mum is from Middlesbrough in the northeast of England. And that's why if anybody looks on my LinkedIn profile, you'll see lifelong Middlesbrough fan.
That'll be Middlesbrough, not the area football club.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
I did see that. But that still doesn't explain the accent.
So in 1987, I did my leaving cert. The economy wasn't exactly in a great state at that time, but I headed off to university. I had an offer from University College Dublin or to go and study in Birmingham. And the chance to really experience life, to stand on my own two feet, Birmingham was the option that I took. So 3 years in Birmingham, but I did do a placement year back here in Penneys.
Did you?
So I did a year getting the Penneys Primark retail or Primark retail experience.
I hope you listened back to the Queen of Primark, Breege O'Donoghue, and her tales of daring do. She's about, what is it, 4 months, 5 months back. So that's about, take your pick, about 20 episodes back. So that'll be, we're 92 today. So make it 52, something like that.
I did listen to it, yes.
Now, let's move on. You stayed in Britain, did you?
I did. So I'd actually been out of the country for 34 years. I spent the first period working in the UK. I was with companies such as PC World Business Direct. So the business arm of PC World. I spent a number of years with them, probably that was the Dixons Group at the time, at its finest. So Stanley Carms was then the chairman of the group, who was very well known within British industry and beyond. I then spent some time with the heady world of office supplies, Viking Direct. I was with them for 14 years. Part of that was in England, but then in 2006 moved to the Netherlands for their European head office, which was a fabulous experience, both from a work perspective, but also from living on continental Europe.
And the reason that I wanted you to give your back CV is to explain that you do know something or a lot about selling.
Absolutely. The roles I've been in have all been about selling, buying the product, procuring it from a merchandising and buying side of things, but selling on, and selling on to generally to small businesses. So absolutely, Colin.
Well, I'm going to give you now, I'm going to shut up for 15 minutes, and I'm going to give you 15 minutes to give a masterclass in selling.
Wow. Well, I think for me, the starting point is very much understanding your customer. Lots of entrepreneurs will have a wonderful idea in their mind, but the question is, have they truly assessed the need, the problems that their potential customers have? So that's key and fundamental as a starting point.
Well, go back to Viking. When you were with Viking, how would you have gone about trying to find out what your customers wanted? You were a big conglomerate or a big organization. You didn't actually go down to the granular and ask Mr. or Mrs. Murphy what they wanted, or did you?
Do you know something? Yes, we did. We held focus groups with our customers and also those who weren't currently buying from the Viking business, to understand what they needed on a daily basis to keep their business running. So absolutely, yes, we did. But as a merchandising team, our responsibility was to make sure that we understood what the market required, the trends, the future trends, and really being close, Connell, to the numbers, really understanding what is selling and the key price points. So pricing is absolutely vital when you're taking your products or your services to market as well. Know what the competition is selling at and try and understand their cost base. So if they are undercutting you significantly, get an understanding why. But for me, and we work with small businesses across Ireland, and it's fundamentally important that those small businesses understand what differentiates them from their many competitors across the county, across the country.
But they don't have the money, nor the bandwidth, nor anything else to do focus groups or all of the stuff that you probably have been trained in that is second nature to you.
No, but they have friends, they have relatives, they have networks they can reach out to and ask simple questions.
Such as?
Why, if you're an existing business and you have customers for a period of time, ask your customers, why are you buying from us? What is it that you like from our service, product perspective, whatever it might be, that's made you come back to us time and time again? And that can often be quite insightful, because more often than not, small business owners, they haven't got the time or they don't feel confident in asking those questions.
But you are back in Ireland almost a year now, I think, and you know us well enough that nobody tells the truth. If you ask me about, you know, you're drinking a bottle of water there. If you said to me, what do you think of my water? Oh, it's grand. Now, you decipher grand to me.
Grand is great, but you've got to, it's that five why. Ask that question five times. Why? And it's on that final why you'll get the true answer. Why does somebody buy a lawnmower? It's not necessarily because they want the grass to look nice and tidy. Ultimately, it's because they want the garden to be a place where they can relax, they can enjoy the summer if and when it comes, they can have barbecues, they can have friends around, and people don't go home and say, gosh, that garden's a mess. So ask that question, why, five times, then you'll get beyond the initial brush off.
And how often are you asking why? Was that five?
I think you missed one. For us in our roles as business consultants, business coaches, to really truly understand why a business is performing or not, you've really got to get into that detail. And it is by asking those probing questions that really gives you the insight into what's happening or not.
But how often are you asking those questions?
I would say almost on a weekly basis.
So Mrs. Murphy comes into your shop and you grill her every time. It'll put her off coming in.
I thought you were asking me directly. So with our clients, we'd ask on a weekly basis. No, absolutely. Identify who are your key customers. And you look at the 80-20 rule. It's still relevant. There'll be a handful of customers which could contribute a significant percentage of your business. So have a conversation periodically. It's going to be different for every business, quarterly, 6 monthly, annually, to ask that question. And that will give you an understanding of why that relationship is strong. And then you can then identify other potential clients in similar industries that you can go out to and prospect as potential customers of for your products or your services.
And you shocked me not so long ago, as in a few minutes ago, when you told me that you love Zoom to expand your business.
Zoom for us has been phenomenally important. We moved to Ireland from the UK in December 2020. We set up our business in April 2021. It seems a long time ago. Lockdown fever was still there. People didn't necessarily want to meet face to face. Having lived outside the country for so long, our network was blank. The piece of paper in front of me, the table, that was our network. So we needed to build our network. And Zoom gave us the vehicle during that period of time to do so. And it's still vitally important.
Now, I'll get back to how you are using Zoom, but we should explain that your co-owner, co-founder and partner, life partner, Susan, it is Mariambo?
Susana Marambio.
Is Chilean.
She's from Chile. We met whilst working
in the
Hang
on a second now. I'm going to correct you. She will kill you. It's Chile.
Chile. She's from Chile. You're right. She will be. And if she was listening, or when she is listening, she will give me a little kick under the table.
So back to Zoom.
Yes.
You are using Zoom. And how are you using it to such effect?
We needed to build our network. So we joined a number of networking groups. Now, I give the example of Cork Chamber of Commerce. In March of 2021, they started a series of Chamber Connect Zoom calls. So Cork Chamber connecting with Galway Chamber, Dublin Chamber, etc. That gave us the opportunity to join these networking meetings, go into breakout groups, and start to build connections. The key then was the follow-up on LinkedIn, and where we saw a business opportunity was to have a one-to-one meeting, but over Zoom at that period of time. So that was 2021. Now that as we've emerged from COVID, Zoom still gives us the opportunity to connect with people around the country, but also on a global basis. So quite recently, I've started to connect with some individuals in Mumbai and India, and potentially they could be joint venture partners for us in that massive, massive city. So Zoom just gives you the opportunity, as I think you talked about before on your show, to really connect on a global basis, which we would never have done 36 months ago.
And I should explain, you're based in Carrigaline, not the centre of Ireland, not even the centre of the Republic of Cork.
Glanmire. Not too far away.
So what you mentioned there, you're using LinkedIn. What are you looking for on LinkedIn? Because you said you see Zoom, you go onto LinkedIn. And what are you doing on LinkedIn to try to develop your business out of that?
So LinkedIn has been absolutely vital for us. But LinkedIn is a way of establishing for your business, especially in the business-to-business arena, trust and credibility, an element of what they call kind of social proof. So if potential customers or clients see, hear of us, one of the first points they'll go now is check out on LinkedIn, and they want to see evidence that what we are posting about supports what we can do for our clients and customers to help them grow their business. Susanna writes a lot of articles aimed to add value to our potential clients, to give them ideas of what could be achieved through working with Beacon Business.
And when you say a lot of articles, how often is she posting?
She's posting 2 to 3 times a week.
That takes time.
It takes absolutely a lot of time. And a lot of people feel that they should be posting every day.
But
you haven't got the time if you're a small business. It's fine if you've got a big marketing team. But we recommend 2 to 3 times a week is a great way to get started. It does take time. It doesn't happen in 1 month, 6 months.
Talk to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when we started this podcast, I actually thought for a while I was talking to myself. But now I swear by LinkedIn and the engagement that we get. I will, Martin Curley, who was on episode 90, it's just incredible the engagement that we have got there.
And people, I still believe in Ireland, in the small business arena, are underestimating the power of LinkedIn. All business owners or whatever role you're in, your LinkedIn profile should talk to your potential customer. Historically, we've all used it as an online CV. LinkedIn is a global networking platform. So have a look at your profile. Just think, you're a business owner and a potential client saw your profile. Does it talk to them? Does it tell them what you do?
And do you pay for the professional level?
Yes.
Now, that's interesting because a fortnight ago I was reading somebody, she's an Irish woman in the UK, I can't remember her name, but she was posting not to bother going professional. In other words, use the favorite word, free Zoom, because it didn't, unless you really, really work it, it doesn't pay for itself.
It's a bit like many networking organizations. Unless you really, really work them, they don't pay for themselves. So like anything in life, you get out of it what you put in. So if you're new to LinkedIn, familiarize yourself with the non-paid version.
That's what we call free.
The free. Thank you very much. That's much easier than that long phrase. But as you move on, focus, and I would recommend moving to the paid version because there is also, you will get access to LinkedIn training. There's a phenomenal amount of training programs online that's available to you. And that is included in your, let's call it membership or your subscription.
Now, you've given us two top tips so far. Give me a three.
Listen to your customers as well. So have that conversation, get close to them. We talked about LinkedIn, but it's very much ensure that you all your marketing activity shouts out about what is unique about you. If you think about the process of your headline, interrupt, we call engage, educate and offer as you move down through an advert. So a headline stops, interrupts. The next, the subhead, engages, promises that more is going to come. And then the educate piece gives you, potential customer, the information to want them to go to the next level. Now, that could be downloading a free piece of collateral from your website that gives them more information about your service and helps you to capture their email addresses.
We had Evelyn Moynihan, the boss of Kilkenny Design, on episode 91, and she mentioned that they take an awful lot of feedback off the floor in their shops. But what I forgot to ask her, because I went off on yet another little rabbit hole tangent, is if Mary or John on the shop floor hears something, do they write it down? Or what is the process? Are you aware of what people use to say, you know, I heard this twice so far, they don't like the colours, or they don't like the product, or it's too expensive? What do people use there to pass back feedback from shop floor to management?
Again, depending on the size of the business, but these days more and more, it's tablets in the stores, that point of sale material. It's about capturing and sharing at every opportunity you can get. So if you have the opportunity in the budget to automate the process through the use of tablets, that's the way to go it, because it's a lot cleaner. Simple Google Forms is a phenomenal way of capturing information.
I'm not familiar with it.
It's literally, you can set up on Google or Microsoft as well, a set number of questions. If it's a shop floor attendee, just simply fills the feedback in, and that will collate in a Google spreadsheet or an Excel spreadsheet if it's the Microsoft alternative. Cost effective, very simple, and very fast to set up.
So listen to the customer. That's always a good idea. What's next?
Now you're pressing me now, Conal.
You see, I'm looking for a real value here for the listeners.
For me, it's understand your market dominating position. We talked about the communication to the customer. Referral marketing is absolutely vitally important for small businesses. So for me, it's about building relationships with potential partners in your town, your county, that can refer customers to yourselves.
But if you're in a small town, Glenmire, as you say, is tiny. How are you going to get referrals once everybody knows about Andrew Walker? Like, you've run out of runway.
Join organisations. So as an example, and thank you for that last night, I was at Glenmire Chamber of Commerce meeting. I'm secretary of the Glenmire Chamber.
More time,
but more opportunity to network, to expand awareness of our business and what we do. And there were a young couple there. They've just set up an apparel business called Be Kind. And that was now an opportunity for them. I invited them along to that meeting. They've now met a group of established business people within the Glenmire area that they can go to. They can ask questions, get advice, get experience, but also potentially someone at that meeting will think, I know a new couple, set this business up, go and get your kit for whatever event from them. So never underestimate the power of referral marketing. We were talking earlier about Business Networking International, phenomenal process for referral. We meet on a weekly basis. And the reason for that is to get close to other business people in the area, understand what their business does, what's unique about them, and what they specialize in. So if you hear about opportunities, friends, family, business connections for their services, then you can refer the other person in your networking group to a potential client. So referrals, 10 testimonials, absolutely vital. And most importantly, it's a relatively cheap way to potentially generate business.
And before I ask you for your hire in a heartbeat, what was the most unusual referral or piece of business that you ever got, whether it's with your new business or newish business or previously? What was the, say, holy Lord, where did that come from?
Gosh, you've got me on that one. So far, they've all been, I would say, relatively run of the mill.
But you said that you're obviously based island of Ireland, but you're now moving to Mumbai, as one does.
Yeah, and thank you very much. Yeah, that came through BNI, Business Networking International. That gives you the opportunity to connect on a global basis. As an example, on Monday, I've got a meeting with what they call the Global Power Team. That is 100 individuals from all around the world that meet on a weekly basis to discuss business opportunities.
And what do you mean you have a meeting with them?
Again, a Zoom meeting. All 100 individuals will do a 20-second pitch, very blooming quick, and then there will be a guest speaker who goes into more depth.
And how come you have been chosen?
You know what? One of the biggest learnings of the last year, our first year in business, is if you don't ask, you don't get.
The ask. I love the ask.
It is.
Everybody needs, should, must have an ask.
One of the pieces of advice to any businesses starting up is just try it.
Final question. Andrew Walker, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Connell, yeah, having listened to a number of your podcasts through the last year, I was prepared for this. And my answer, it wouldn't be, it's not Jurgen Klopp. It's not anybody like that. I was very fortunate in September last year to meet a gentleman called Kingsley Akins. He is CEO of the Networking Institute based in Blackrock here in County Dublin. Kingsley has a phenomenal network on a global basis, something which many business leaders would give their right and their left arms to have. He's been very generous with his time. He is a phenomenal communicator. He is a phenomenal presenter. And he's just someone who has given me and Susanna, given us some great advice. And that's where the bit about just try it. And for every business deal that might go wrong, it's a great investment in the next opportunity that will go well.
And I know Kingsley very well because Kingsley is a very active member of the Irish International Business Network that I chair. And he pitched up on Thursday week last and gave a presentation. He is ex-Ireland Funds and, as you say, one of the world's best networkers, maybe. I mean, absolutely top end.
Absolutely. I think if some of the names in his network, you wouldn't believe.
True. Good on you, Kingsley. You've got a job. I think. That is Andrew Walker, co-founder, co-owner of Beacon Business Commercial Services based in Cork, BBCS. I like that one, BBCS. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And that's it from That Great Business Show, episode 92. Do please share this podcast on social media and do it now before you forget. A click of a button for you, commercial success for us. And press the subscribe to this podcast button right now and then you'll never miss your favorite business podcast. Do also talk to us directly via our LinkedIn page as we were discussing earlier. Brilliant brands like Big Red Cloud, Microfinance Ireland, IsMe, Virgin Media, Udros Nogatakta all advertise with us. Why doesn't yours? All our great business insights and tips are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, Defecto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. Back them because they back us. And Alice Carroll of Fox's Bow Whiskey, currently raising €500,000 on Crowdcube so that they can go mega, tells me they're 90% there. We'll follow their progress, but do take professional advice if you think you want to invest. We work with our great friends here at the Dublin Podcast Studios, including sound engineer Brian Botanicals Begley, who makes our podcast taste 10 times better. Later, studio manager Peter Rice adds ice in a slice so that we are undoubtedly the world's best sounding podcast. And the Dublin Podcast South FM studios are open for business. And if you want to record a podcast here, check their website and have a chat with Peter. If you would like the media group to produce your podcast, then I am your Buchel. Talk to me, please. Best do so on LinkedIn, I think. And don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have our regular column all about the podcast. So from me, Conal Moran, or Mila Bajas, for listening on this slant column.